reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half on this Thursday, and my crazy tour and this crazy week of At the Races that has done a little bit of everything. Monday at Keswick in Virginia near Charleston and Monticello. And then Tuesday at Colonial. Wednesday back at Saratoga with Chuck Simon and Seth handling the responsibilities while Tina and I were at Chincoteague watching the ponies swim. Delaware Park today with J.J. Gracie and Tony Black and the retiring John Mooney. So it was very opportune with John, with his career here ending on Friday, essentially, or Saturday. And then tomorrow back at Saratoga for the weekend preview. And Chris Sobosinski sitting in. Tony ran off for a minute. And a perfect opportunity to kind of talk. The one thing we didn't do with John was talk about Delaware Park. And I was referring at the end of the break as we were going to take the 90-minute break. What a sweet facility this is, underappreciated. I always talk about this with Monmouth as well and its history. Well, this track has a very similar history as Monmouth does, as a jewel in the marketplace. And it's a great history with some fabulous horses that have run here, and it's a valuable property in the game and in the game's history. And Chris, you obviously treasure it.
Yes, you hit on actually the segue with Delaware and Saratoga is perfect, because this track used to be nicknamed Little Saratoga.
That's right.
And there was another nickname, the Saratoga of the South. And we're talking probably back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s when that nickname was popular and people. But at that time, this track was thought of in that high of regard, that it was the kind of track that you could put Saratoga in conjunction with. And it's got a lot of similarities, too. The paddocks, got the trees open, the backstretch of stable areas, wide open, perfect place for horses to train. And even the structure before it was refurbished in the mid-1950s also had like a Saratoga kind of look. It was really unique. And every once in a while on my Twitter feed at Del Park Racing, I send out old photographs like that just to remind people of what the place was like. And you're also right about some of the great horses that run here. I mean, it's a phenomenal history of great horses, especially with fillies and mares. Delaware Park has become known as another great saying, old saying that people probably don't remember, it was probably before my time, was with a filly and mare, go to Delaware. And that was because the Delaware Handicap and the Delaware Oaks.
Sure.
And another unique thing about Delaware Park is the Delaware Handicap, I think in 1953 or 52, was actually the first race for fillies and mares in the world that was worth six figures or more.
Wow.
And it was a really prestigious race. I mean, obviously it's a prestigious race now, but the management at the time really wanted to gear up towards a filly and mare division for two reasons. First, they thought they should be highlighted, and they had a lot of filly and mare brood mares. We had Christiana Stables, Brandywine Stables.
That's right.
A lot of those people were on the board here at Delaware Park. So they wanted an opportunity to showcase some of those better horses that they had. And the other reason, too, was because they wanted to look at an opportunity to develop a niche in the racing industry where they would specialize in filly and mare races. And that's kind of why, when people ask now, why do you have so many filly and mare races, not very many races for the boys?
That's the history.
That's the reason why. And it's always been that way. And I'm very proud that it's continued to be that way.
When did you come here?
It's great. Another great question. I've been a fan of Delaware Park my entire life. I was born in Delaware. My father was a racing fan. As a matter of fact, my father was so passionate about racing that he's got home movies of Politely Win the 1968 Delaware Handicap. He's also got great home movies of some Preaknesses, the Secretariat Preaknesses with the miniskirts at the time. He's got another great shot of Haywood Hale Bruin wearing that really loud blazer that he would wear. So my father was that passionate about it. And he would always affectionately say that, Chris, you got your diapers changed at Delaware Park. And he's right, because when people ask me my very first memory of the track, I can't tell them because literally it was, it's no different than the first day I came home from the hospital because I was so small when I was coming here. I've been coming here my entire life that it's always been a part of my, always been a part of my life, so much so that I don't have a first memory of it when I first started coming.
Too funny.
But I was lucky. In school, I actually got a job as a mutual clerk, I think in 1986. So I've been here about 35 years, I guess, or I'm approaching 35. And one thing led to another. I got a job as the morning line odds, and then I got a job in marketing. And that's how it all started. And my father, who was an attorney, was actually jealous of me because I was working at the racetrack.
I love it. It's that kind of it's for everybody. You're all the panelists today between JJ and Tony, John Mooney, and now Chris. Everybody, either born into it or spoon fed the game from early on. And once it infects you, you're in trouble. But a specific affection for a certain venue is always interesting because there's people, this sort of parallels whenever we mention how there's people in Brooklyn. We're going after the show, we're going to run to Brooklyn to see Tina's son, our son Spencer. There's people that live in Brooklyn that might spend their entire life and never go into Manhattan. Literally, or go into Manhattan, twice in their life. There's people that love a certain racetrack and venue, and never, aren't that interested in they might, go up to Pimlico, might have gone to a Preakness, might have gone, to a DC International Laurel one fall day. But, this is the venue they love and it's the one that they, have affection for.
You hit it on another really good point. Delaware Park's been really special in the community. I can remember being 7, 8 years old. And my grandfather, on my mother's side of the family, actually, he was also passionate about horse racing, but also only lived maybe about a mile away from the track, would take me to the backstretch to see the old fights with Francis Jacques Lebel. And what you are hitting on is how there are a large group of people who live in the area that are very passionate about Delaware Park. And it's because of things like the Jacques Lebel fights. And it's also because of things back in the 1980s when John Mooney came here to save the track. Every day, I can remember as a kid growing up, the first thing I would look for in the results wasn't the who won the first, second race, the Dilly Double. It was what was the handle. Because if we saw we had a good handle, we felt good about the future of the racetrack.
Wow.
And we could tell. We knew growing up in this area that, if you did $1 million, you were doing okay. As a matter of fact, in the 70s, Delaware Park was the first track to start Sunday racing. The old saying was, as long as Delaware Park can do $1 million on Sunday, they're okay. Well, the reason why we closed in 82 was because we weren't doing $1 million on Sunday anymore.
Let me elaborate a little bit on Jacques Lebel's fights.
Yeah.
Okay. I just happened to be in the barn that Cal Lynch had. It used to be my barn all the years I used to come here. And Jacques Lebel would run the rec hall. Okay. And he was a character. All right. So what happened was, they put this ring up, okay? So when there was a beef on the backside, they would, instead of being here with the stewards, they put him in the ring.
I've heard this.
It's a true story,
I've
okay?
heard this.
He would always say, well, let's just see how bad you really are, okay? And, maybe 30 seconds into the first round, both of their tongues were out, and they weren't going to play anymore. And then what he would do, he would bring guys in from Wilmington to fight here.
Yeah.
And when you thought that you were bad enough and good enough because somebody could beat you, here comes some guy from Wilmington that's going to clean your clock.
Tiberius. The Tiberi brothers, and there was a couple of others.
And he
there was actually a couple that actually made some national news.
Were pro.
I mean, they didn't get that far along. As a matter of fact, it's just not really Jacques Lebel, but Henry Milligan, who fought Mike Tyson, was, I think, second in the United States Olympic boxing the year that Mike Tyson was a boxer, actually had his last fight here. He's from Wilmington, Delaware, graduated from Princeton, and there was a lot of hype about him.
Wow.
And we had a fight here for him, and it didn't turn out so well for the local crowd that day. Let's put it that way.
It was.
It's also the other interesting thing about Jacques Lebel and the connection to Saratoga is that Jacques Lebel was the recreation director here, and then he took the job at Saratoga, which also too it was almost essentially Saratoga was part of the Delaware circuit, especially the steeplechase circuit, because this track has a really rich history of steeplechase racing.
Very much so.
So, yeah, that's another neat connection.
You two should, because you overlapped, and we're here, obviously, for Rich. And that, you know, one of the obligations the show has is eulogizing legendary people when they leave us from the game. And leg of this travel
over provision.
It doesn't matter the cost, because everybody wants to be famous.
Second leg of this that he would tell about getting the bet in from Vietnam when he was in this when he was in the service and being able to get down a bet from Vietnam on the Dell cap.
Oh my.
Right?
Yes.
I would make him tell that story every year.
You know what Dell cap that was? It was a 68 Dell cap of Polite.
The one that my dad took over.
He never saw the race until he met my dad 35 years later and he saw my dad's home movies.
Oh, that's crazy. That's funny.
Yes. That's how close we are here at Delaware Park when it comes to being sports fans or fans of horse racing, because Rich ultimately was the ultimate fan of racing, and I am, and I think all of us are here. I think we're fans first, and we work in the industry second.
Well, and JJ, I mean, his personality was so perfect, and really the two of you, in terms of Philadelphia and Delaware, you guys were the TV.
We were the
faces.
We were the face of horse racing.
Exactly,
okay? and the reason why. Rich and I were cut from the same cloth. No, we wanted to bring horse racing to the folks that didn't understand and wanted to understand on their terms. Do you know what I mean? We didn't want to talk over their heads or below them. We want to talk right to them. And listen, I'm going to be 80 years old in April, okay? And I'm going to dance with the girl I went to the dance with, okay? If I lasted all this year doing what I'm doing and you still want me to do it at 79, 80 years old, I did something right. And that's the same thing with Rich, you know? And I remember his son told me, I never met his son until last year, and he told me, Rich is glad that you're sitting in his seat because he has all that much respect for you, you have that much respect for him. And yeah. I understand I have big shoes to fill when I came here, but, you know, it was what it is.
The common denominator between the two is both have big tents. Everybody's included. And it doesn't matter who you are and where you come from.
That's a nice way to put it.
And their number one objective before giving somebody a winner is making somebody smile. And they make people smile through horse racing, which is really awesome and a testament to both JJ and Rich's career.
Well, I appreciate that, but I remember I had a horse going to the Kentucky Derby called Irish Sir, and they kept sending everybody to the barn at Garden State Park, and I got used to doing the interviews. And one day, Bill Fedati, God rest his soul, he said to me, listen, WNEW is coming in from New York, and they want to do an interview with you. I said, okay, no problem. So in comes this big production truck. You know, big production truck. I said, it's a little more than just a little interview, okay? And he says, well, what? I said, what do you want from me? He said, we want to mic you and follow you around for 4 days. And I said, why are we doing this? He said, we're going to do a feature on you and Bob Brennan. Because Bob Brennan owned Garden State Park at the time. And he said, I want to give you a half hour, and I'm going to give Bob Brennan a half hour. Okay? So when it was all said and done, he says, Joe, I said, yes. Come on in here for a second. I said, ooh, probably screw this one up. All right. Won't be the first time. And he said, Tim, I just want to tell you something. He said, if you ever wanted to get into broadcasting, this is your sport. I said, why is that? He says, because you look like the sport, you act like the sport, and you talk to the people. And if you have those three things and you do that, you'll be very successful. And he was right, because at that time, Tony will tell you, they started Philadelphia Park Live. All right? So I went over and he said, here's the tape of the show. And it was really, not because I was in it, it was a really good show called Nothing But a Horse Race. Okay? I went over to Hugh Gannon at that time. You know, I said, Mr. Gannon, you don't know me. My name's Joe Gracie, and I'm a trainer. And I just did an hour feature for WNEW. I'd like you to look at the tape and see if I'm worthy of a position in your thing. He said to me, we hired all our talents. And he said to me, where did you get your communications degree? I don't have one. I said, where did you get your trainer's license? He said, I don't have one. I said, well, that's touche. You know, so that, and then I kept aggravating him. I said, I'll make a deal with you. He said, what's that? I said, let me take my lead pony to the paddock every day, and I'll do a trainer tip. You don't have to pay me. I'll get a sponsor to pay me, okay? So we did this for like 2 months. It got really popular, Steve, really popular.
That's cool.
So one day, I'm saying to myself, you know what? I called up you. I said, you, the pony's sick. He said, okay. and then I said, all right. So the next day I call up. I said, the pony's sick. And he said, really? And it went on for about a week. So he calls me up at the barn, and he says to me, listen, we got a tremendous amount of phone calls and letters wanting to know how sick the pony is. I said, he's pretty sick, you. I said, but if you could sign my name to the bottom of a check, he'll be well for tomorrow.
he'll get well in a hurry.
So that's the rest of the story. They start paying me, and I went from doing the trainer tips to the weather, to the interviews, to the co-hosting, to the hosting. I lasted from there from 1986. Tony, how long did I go? 1990? I forget. How long did you do phone bet there? I don't know. But anyway, I was there about a good 10 years. And that was where I started my career in broadcasting. Because people, till this day, and I don't mean anything about talent out there now. Talent out there now want to hear themselves. They need to understand who they're talking to. A guy's coming in here with his case $20 bill, okay? He doesn't know that horse's dapples on his rear end. He wants to know, can he earn me money, you know? You know, in this game, you snooze, you lose, right? If you got a hunch, you bet a bunch, okay? So you need to understand, and I don't know how many people listen to me, but probably more than I realize, you know what I mean? And like, he and I are under the microscope because he makes the morning line, and I'm telling them what they want to bet. So they'll say, well, you know, what makes you guys know that much? I said, well, somebody has to do it. You know?
Yeah.
And I have been able to do the test of time. That's all.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about all of you, obviously, and Tony, too.
Right.
50 years in the irons. Chris Sobosinski sitting in with us with JJ and Tony. And, Chris, on that topic, doing the line, lines have been in the news and on Twitter a lot this last couple of weeks. It always seems to be a topic that everybody, you know, everybody thinks is an easy job, and how can, you know, Brad Thomas, who's as knowledgeable a pundit and handicapper as there is anywhere in the game, Brad came under tremendous critique this past week when he made Taba the favorite over Jack Christopher, and it was unusual, I thought, for him. I mean, because it didn't seem like something. I understood his rationale, but it did seem out of character. I guess not to be, you know, convinced of his opinion, but I was surprised anyway the way he approached it. But how long have you been doing the lines, and what's your, you know, from a handicapping standpoint as well, what's your approach to the game?
Since 1993.
Wow.
And
wow,
doing the morning line at that long at a track like Delaware Park has been a phenomenal experience, because I've gone through a lot of different cycles when it comes to the kind of racing that we've had here at Delaware Park. But back to the Brad Thomas thing in the morning line odds, how it always gets criticism. It is a stationary target. And it is a target that can be criticized after the fact. It's almost like most of the time it's criticized for Monday morning quarterback. There are times where it's kind of obvious people can stick their neck out and say this is not a very good morning lines. But most of the time it's Monday morning quarterback. And the third thing is you need to have thick skin to do it. But my approach is with doing the morning line odds is I try to keep things simple. I try to focus on the trainers and the jockeys. The better jockeys find the better horses. The better trainers find the better jockeys. So I try not to complicate it more than it has to be. The other approach that I consider too are drops in class and speed figures. And I just try to stick to that for the most part. And the other defense of the morning line odds maker, and this is with Brad, I don't know what was going through his mind when he was doing it, and that's not a criticism, but it, depending on your frame of mind, can affect the odds. And if you're having a good day, usually you're right in there doing what you're supposed to do. And sometimes if you're having a bad day, it's even more challenging to rise up to the occasion of what you normally do. So it is a tough job, because you're always getting criticized to do it. But the final thing that I would like to say about the morning line odds is, what people got to remember is this. Morning line odds people are essentially handicapping the race is based upon how they think the people are going to react to the race. And I will tell you this, who have a handicap my entire life, it is much easier handicapping the horses than it is handicapping the people. And I only hit around 35% winners. So if I can get 35% races right on my morning line odds, I'm kind of happy, to tell you the truth.
No, that's the, the average, right? That's the...
Yeah. The average winners, but the morning line odds technically should be right every time. But over time, doing it a lot, I've just realized that you got to go with the flow. You can't take things too seriously.
It's a thankless. It's like being a good umpire or being a good steward. If nobody's talking about it, you're doing a good job.
And we've all been there. I mean, $16,000 race on the turf for non-winners of two, 12 horses in it. You look at the race, all the horses look the same, and I make a morning line odds, and people come up to me and they go, I can't believe you made that horse the favorite, and that horse the second choice, and that horse the third choice. And I look at them, I go, we could do a million different scenarios on this race, and we'd have a million different outcomes when it comes to the morning line odds, because this race is that competitive. So, give me a break. keep things real. And I think for the most part, most morning line odds people do a really good job and get it to where it has to be. But there are those races where...
Just eye crossers. And then, of course, when you got... Especially when you're in a market like this. In fact, we were with...
Oh, you brought up another...
Right? On Saturday, we were at Haskell. We were at Monmouth with Will Schwartz and John Service. And John had a horse actually run Saturday that he was very pleased with. That was a big price and ran a good third. I brought that topic up people coming down from parks, people coming in from
very good point.
Coming from Charlestown and coming in from New York and from Monmouth. You got a mix of horses in some races where you've got to compare class levels and try to see for subtle drops and subtle raises.
It's hard wherever you do it.
Yeah.
But it's particularly hard at tracks like Delaware and Monmouth because you have a lot of shippings. They're coming from all over the place. And that's what makes it neat. I can remember on a Wednesday we had a stakes race, and I think we had five or six jockeys come down from New York with like seven or eight named trainers in the race. And somebody was giving me a hard time because I didn't make one of the better New York jockeys the favorite. And I'm like, well, so which one? Or which trainer? Take your pick, man.
Yeah. It comes right down to it. It's just an educated guess.
Yes. So, but that's what makes that, and that's what makes Delaware Park racing so unique, too. And so fun to handicap if you're just a player. We have a little bit of everything. And it's neat. Sometimes you go from the $8,000 claimer or the $16,000 claimer, not winners of two on the turf, to a really nice allowance race where the horse is pointing for a stakes race. And I'm like, how do you go from the swings are neat. Let's put it that way. And that's what makes the pick five challenging and the pick four is challenging here at Delaware Park. So, yeah.
I made a pick five ticket yesterday, the last one I'll ever do. That's too hard.
The pick five?
Too hard. Too hard. I know you're good at that. It's too hard for me.
And here you've got the low. You got the low takeout on the pick five, which makes it very attractive. On that topic, and Andy Simoff is going to wander in here in a little bit. Probably a good occasion to talk about some handicapping, and you talk about the trainers and the jocks. Every chance I get to talk about Carol Cedeno, and a rider who, in addition to coming back to the racetrack after two children, gets right back to her elite level, has won how many riding titles here?
Six
riding, and
not
no,
last year. Jamie Rodriguez.
Jamie's tough, and I think he's leading the. I think he's leading the riders so far this season. But and he's a terrific jock. But she is as underappreciated on a national basis as any rider that has had a career of her longevity and success.
Well, to.
She's the Tony Black of Delaware.
Really, to speak on her, and I have a lot of respect. I rode a lot with her when I was here and in Philly. There's one thing that I really got to say for the girl riders. A lot of them are going to be underappreciated just because they're females, and that does play into it. A lot of the riders that broke through the male-female barrier in the late 60s and early 70s, you know, they paid a price. You know, yeah, riders like even Rochelle Lee, Sheila McKenna, you know, riders like that. You had Kathy Kushner.
Allegood.
Marianne Allegood. They broke through. But you know what? Then you had the Julie Crone that really got recognition, and she won the Belmont, so that even gave her more recognition. But it's still, as much as everybody says, oh, it's a fair playing field, it's still tough for, not as tough as it was in the 60s or 70s or 80s or 90s, but it's still tough. And she doesn't get the recognition that she deserves. And I respect her as a rider. I rode against her. She probably didn't like my riding because I would be riding her. You know, I ride riders tight. But she, and every once in a while, she'd yell at me. But I respected her opinion. And
That's being very modest, Tony. You ride them tight.
I'll start promoting her right now. She, and not, or take it one step further than Tony. She is in really good company in Delaware Park racing history. There's only three riders in the history of the track to win six titles. Ramon Dominguez,
I was going to say,
Mike
Ramon.
McCarthy, yeah. And Carol Cedeno.
There you go.
And when Carol Cedeno was going for the leading title last year that she didn't win, she was going for the record, which says a lot about. And to be able to do that here at a track like this is very significant, because you can be a really good rider and you still have a hard time breaking in with some of the trainers here. I mean, I've seen some pretty good riders come here and just couldn't break in with any trainers or get a foothold, and then they would have to go someplace else and they'd be successful. And to do that here, to keep that many people happy, is really a testament to her. Not only that, but she does hold the record too for most wins on a single day. And there were, I think, seven, but there were probably eight well-known jockeys. I think Eldon Nelson was the first to win six. Mike McCarthy won six three times.
Three times. There you go.
He ran. He did it back-to-back days, actually. But Carol Cedeno won seven on one card, which Ramon Dominguez has never won six. So those are the things that make me realize how special Cecilia is. Not only that, though, and she's from Delaware, and she takes a lot of pride in being able to be successful in her hometown track. She's from Middletown, Delaware, and that's where she raises her family. She takes a lot of pride in this track.
And rides Angels here, right? Where's he riding, the husband?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know that. I don't know. I don't know that she was married to a jock, was she?
What I thought she was. Who was she married? Wasn't she married to a rider?
Yeah, I don't.
I would be remiss. I mentioned all those girl riders' names. I left one out that I would be remiss to not mention. Barbara Jo Rubin. How did I not mention her name? And I was just at a benefit with Jockeys and Jeans and PDJF at Churchill Downs, and here was Barbara Jo Rubin showed up.
Nice.
So how was I so remiss to not mention her name? Sorry, Barbara.
Another cool thing about Delaware Park, too, is we've had a lot of nice female riders go through here. Tony mentioned, too, Rochelle and Julie Crone. But we've also had Rosine Dupravnik, who was also in the Maryland
That's
circuit.
That's true.
We had Rosemary Hohmeister. I mean, when it comes to junior. So when it comes to female riders, we've had quite a few nice ones that have some of the better ones, actually, I would say.
Well, there's nice stories. I had Jeremy Rose on the show when he got
Jeremy up in the jocks room. I just had a little wrestling confrontation.
Oh boy, here we go.
He still wants to wrestle when I walk in that jocks room. Jeremy, I say, you little germ, get away from me. I call him germ, not Jeremy.
Well, I tell you, he's won 17. He's got 17 wins.
Yeah.
And only out of 77 starts, so he's got about half the starts that Carol and Jamie Rodriguez have, and 17 wins. So he's done very well. We should also, and Joe, you can talk about this. You've got horsemen, and they may be on the backside of their careers, but you've got some horsemen that very quietly are here during the summers. John Rigottieri, Ned Allard. You've got guys, Jerry Robb, who
right.
is as good as anybody, and especially with the 2-year-olds. I'll tell you who's had a very nice summer so far. Ferris Allen.
He had a long shot yesterday. I mean, yep. A bomber. Yeah, he had a long shot yesterday. That paid double digits.
He's come alive at this meet. He really has. You know what I mean?
Nice.
I mean, you know, it's just sometimes it's a change of venue, a change of a scenery. And, you know, sometimes you get stagnant where you've been stable for a year after year, and you come here and things just work out for you. I'll tell you, it's really had a great meet here. It's Cal Lynch.
Yeah.
I mean, positively.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, I've known him a long time. I'm sorry, you've Tony.
Yeah. He's a part guy, Cal Lynch. He went to Merlin. Has a brother that rides, Fergal Lynch. I don't know if Fergal, I guess, is between Merlin and here. I don't know. You know.
Mostly Maryland.
Mostly
but,
Merlin.
But he does come here.
But Cal's a good old school horseman. You know, these are guys that I watched develop into trainers. Now I'm talking, I was on the track in the 60s. You know,
sure.
So I'm 70 years old. But I watched these guys develop as trainers. And they came, some of the guys you mentioned, I can remember. Remember when they were assistant trainers for different outfits, you know, and now they're trainers. But they came up the way they brought riders and trainers up in those years. You know, they brought them up, they rubbed horses, they walked horses, they galloped horses, they ponied horses. I can remember riding my first race, and I won 5 out of my first 8, and I was still ponying horses in the afternoon for my boss till the steward stopped him from sending me out there on the pony because I was a jockey. But, you know, that was the way people came up. And we've lost a little bit of that. And you know one thing that the horse racing industry doesn't advertise? You got the lotteries that you just pick numbers, and there's nothing cerebral about them unless your birthday makes it cerebral. In the horse racing industry, you can just pick numbers, nothing cerebral. Or you can have handicappers like Chris, and you can have information, and you can pick winners or try to pick winners with that cerebral aspect, past performances, handicappers' opinions. And all the information is out there for you to collect and gather and process and say, well, I can make it more than just picking numbers for the Mega Million, which nobody's hitting for how many months. But I can pick numbers, or I can do it in a way that's cerebral. And the horse racing industry doesn't advertise that enough. It's handicapping
it's really
to make
true.
You have one notch above the guy who just picks numbers.
No, it's a thinking man's game. That's always been the case.
And there is just luck involved too.
Well, that's that.
Well, you'd rather be lucky than smart, because lucky always wins.
There's guys walking around lucky. It's unbelievable.
I've been neither lucky or smart at times.
And there's multiple different ways to get to the window to cash a ticket. There's multiple different ways. And that's what makes it so fascinating.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't tell you the number of times I've bumped into a fan or another handicapper, and they told me their strategy for the race, and I was politely nod and go, okay.
And I
would turn around and be like, thinking, that guy's got no shot. Well, you know what? At the, when the race was official,
it's 100%.
He's cashing, and I'm not.
It's very true.
More to you, my man.
That's very true. None of us have find that a foreign circumstance. You're listening, you're discussing, and listen, we do it every leading up, particularly to weekends when we have these stakes races, and that's why, as they say, right, that's why they put them in the gate. It's, yeah,
you can't the mystery win if you don't walk in the gate. You cannot win. And they say, why are you putting this horse in that race? Because he needs to run.
He's
he
ready.
He fits, and whatever happens, happens.
That's exactly it.
I mean, he can't read the odds board. I mean, just leave him be.
Well, and that's what was a little annoying about these people attacking David Wolichuk for running Emma Devil yesterday, because there were plenty of us that looked at the four horse race, granted, and looked and said, all right, she's got a shot in here. So, to criticize somebody for taking a shot with a graded stake opportunity and so forth. I mean, just these last few weekends, particularly since the summer started, we've had these big price winners in big spots that people were completely dismissive of. So I appreciate
good story
that.
Along those lines that Graham Ocean told me about when he won the 1997 Delaware Handicap with Power Play. I believe that was the right year. When he was still a young trainer, I think the Delaware Handicap was only his third greatest stakes victor at the time, and he was still trying to make a name for himself. But he convinced the owners to run the horse in the race, or encouraged them. In the beginning of the race, he wasn't too confident when the horses were going around the clubhouse turn. He said, at that moment, I was thinking, oh my gosh, what did I do? But then down the backstretch and on the far turn, he went from being, oh my gosh, what did I do, to thinking, oh my gosh, I'm a genius, and then the horse won. And he said, because of that experience, and others races similar to that, and he referred to Animal Kingdom and the Kentucky Derby, he said, because of experiences like that, I've learned that if you have a shot, you got to take that shot and see what happens. And you'll never know. I mean, you will never know unless you take that shot. So, I mean, that's a story that stuck with me.
Sometimes owners just take a shot. And I can give you a good example of a $100,000 race that I won, and the owner just took a shot. He came to the barn one morning, and he said, I just supplemented my Juliet into the Michigan Mile. It cost him $15,000. The trainer, if she can go 3/4 of 7/8, she can go a mile. The trainer looked at him and said, George, the race is a mile and an eighth. You didn't read the italics in parentheses. It's a mile and an eighth, and she's never been a mile and an eighth. Yeah, he said, well, it's too late now. I just supplemented her into the race. They got my 15,000. She's running. And Black, you're galloping her every day. I said, I'm riding at Monmouth Park. How am I going to come to Detroit and gallop her and not ride for a week and then ride her in the Michigan Mile in an eighth? He says, well, I'm going to fly you back from Newark to Detroit Airport every night. You can sleep there, gallop her in the morning, and I'll fly you back to Newark every day. I did that like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Come Friday, I said, I had enough of this flying. I'm staying here. I ain't flying back. I took off at Monmouth. Well, she's in against the boys, right? Horse like, little horse like on the sly. Pretty capable horse. She's going a mile and an eighth, and he supplemented her to the race. Well, guess who won the race?
You.
My Juliet.
You know,
so that's an owner calling the shot. So you can't discount a horse till they cross the wire. You know,
right.
Don't knock them until they've passed away and they're not living and breathing.
Right.
Larry, that's why they run them.
Larry Reynolds.
Whoa.
Larry Reynolds on Power Play winning that Del Cap.
Yeah, and the Power Play paid at least $35.
Try $57.50. $60.
Yeah, another funny story about that is
This is John Kern. He's what's the voice.
Absolutely.
And he probably called that race. You know?
I was getting quotes from Graham Motion the entire week leading up to that race. And even I was thinking, this horse doesn't have a shot.
That was his third. It was only a grade three.
And that's what I learned. If Graham Motion says he's got a shot, you pay attention.
No, exactly. Exactly. John, I having just had John Mooney here the 48 hours from the end of his career, and I mentioned the passing of
I mentioned the passing of John Wayne. And for those who don't know, a regulator in Delaware forever and an important member of the RCI team and virtually every regulator management steering committee that existed. And John leaving, your departure, and of course Rich Glaser's passing. I mean, to have four, kind of a four horsemen, really, of Delaware racing for the last, you know, four decades, it's a big turnover, a lot. We had a nice conversation as you were getting ready to retire, and you know, your calls, you called one of our winners, Rampillion.
Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, particularly you and Dave Rodman have voices that became so synonymous with the venue.
Yeah, it was a fun run. I guess you could say with everything happening right now, it's sort of the end of an era here at Delaware Park. You know, people sometimes aren't used to change. And, I mean, I live close to Philadelphia Park, and, you know, Keith Jones was there forever.
That's right.
He's the voice of Philadelphia Park.
That's right.
And Chris Griffin's a great announcer, but it takes a while to get used to. Josh Brown does a great job here at Delaware Park. I think he's just different style from me, so it takes people a little while to get used to that, but they're still really good announcers. And Richard Grunder down at Tampa Bay retired almost like after I retired. Two other guys retired who actually worked 37 years too. So it just gets to the point where, like, you think you'd called every race you can possibly call, and they start looking redundant, you know, like the same race over and over again. Although it's a great sport, and it was a fun job to have like that. I just got to the point where, like, I'm just doing it maybe because I want a paycheck. And this is a game where you
out very well with the steeplechasers because, you know, the steeplechasers are kind of hot and heavy from March through October, and the babies sort of come in October, and they're generally leaving to go to their trainers at the track, you know, the end of April, beginning of May. So it's sort of a very nice wax and wane kind of a thing. So we really enjoy doing that. We break yearlings for a few people, and you know, in the wintertime when we're a little quieter, and this time of year, obviously, we don't have any babies. You know, it's just sort of all the steeplechasers hanging out in South Carolina. And, yeah, it works really well. And, I mean, Bernie's great. If anybody who knows Bernie will tell you he can ride absolutely anything, literally. I mean, he's ridden some really tough, really famous horses over the years, you know, for flat trainers, for Kieran McLaughlin, for Mark Henning, even for Tommy Skiffington. He's amazing. I mean, I've learned so much even just watching Bernie. I remember the first day I ever saw, one of the first times I ever saw Bernie ride, he was on a colt of Mark Henning's. And Mark Henning had the old barn in Saratoga, sort of down by Lucas's at the back of the Phipps kitchen. And I was walking behind Bernie to the track, and he was on this Tomorrow's Cat colt. And the colt got to the horse path by Shug McGahee's barn, and it reared up on its hind legs, and it proceeded to walk the entire way down that horse path, which is a fairly long horse path. It hopped the whole way on its hind legs, and Bernie never even moved a muscle. I mean, you know, he was, you know, giving it the double thump with his, you know, but I mean, this horse just reared up. I mean, and it was straight up in the air and hopped the whole way down the horse path. And Bernie never even, there wasn't even a hair out of place, and went down, went to the track, and off it went. And I remember being behind him and thinking, whoa, who is that guy?
So that's before you guys.
Oh yeah. It was before we started dating.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Well, Point Given famous for doing that.
Yes. Oh my gosh, we saw Point Given a few times too in Saratoga. He was quite an athlete.
He would go up and walk that way too.
Yes,
and,
he would.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And every hot walker's nightmare.
Yes.
that's a perfect segue into the Kate and Bernie Dalton story. Your background, what got you, you've got the, frankly, you've got the. I've always thought you have the equestrian look about you, so to speak.
Yeah, I got on my first pony when I was three, and I've just, you know, the inside joke is I've never gotten off. My parents kept kind of hoping I would grow out of it, and it just never happened. I've been horse crazy my whole life, and came by it only because our neighbors had horses when we were growing up. My parents had nothing to do with horses, thought they were dirty and smelly.
How do we not take advantage of this? How do we not, go from San Diego, and Zotina and I went, my first summer experience, other than Del Mar for Breeders' Cup, but...
it's really unique. I mean, I've been there once for a couple of days, and it's like a fashion show. I'm watching the people coming to the track there.
Unbelievable.
It was a fun environment, overlooking the beach there and the ocean there like that. One thing I didn't like about Del Mar, don't ever mention fish tacos to me again.
You're not impressed?
No, I'm not a fish taco.
You're not a fish taco guy.
No.
Unbelievable. Let me get the mic to Andy Simoff, and I couldn't come to Delaware and not get a visit in with you. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm good. Hold on. What happened here? Why are you... What happened here? That's strange. Huh. That's bizarre. The mic, this mic kind of went... Wow. I don't know what happened. My stick mic... There, test. No, the stick mic kind of went dead on us. Wow. Now, the fact is, I do tromp this thing around a lot, but no, the stick mic went dead. All right, put that headset on then, Andy. And I'll try to figure this thing out. And Andy Simoff joins us.
Good to see you.
It's great to have you in person. First time ever. I plenty of times on the phone.
Yeah.
But first time sitting right here, and I had to come to Delaware given this trip that I'm on.
Right, I heard you were coming, so I made it a point to get a hold of you.
I greatly appreciate it, and of course, we talked to Andy on all different topics. Simoff Transport, we're certainly not going to miss a chance to have you plug the vans.
Right, yeah, this is our home base right here, so this is where... This is where it all happens.
But you can't stay away from the backside and from and from training your own.
No, I blink my eyes and I got 24 horses looking at me every morning. So can't stay away. I don't have to tell you. Once it gets in your blood, you're done. So.
Now, exactly. And the JJ trying to pull off a try that again. I think it's in the bottom. I think something went something got, because I heard some crackling when John Mooney was working it, and I think something on that end, in the base of the mic, is gone wrong. Yeah, no, that baby's deader than, let's say it, Kelso's nuts. wow, that. I'm sorry, Jay. I don't know. It's not gonna. No, that's not gonna come back. No, son of a gun. All right. Well, we'll make do with the two mics. Andy, we had a conversation early with Tony and JJ, and I know you were listening. The HISA, your perspective, and how are you handling what's coming down the pike?
Well, just. It's crazy the way they're doing it. I don't think they have the manpower or the technology or the expertise to enforce all these crazy rules. And, like a perfect example is here at HISA, you're supposed to have a barn where if the horses come back sore, you can void the claim. That's part of their rules. Well, here they don't have one, so they pause that particular rule, which I don't have a problem with, whatever, but... How do they pause some rules and then follow other ones? I mean, the whole thing's just kind of a mess right now. And like always, the horsemen are the guys that suffer. The guys that are here at 4:30 every morning, they're the ones that are got to take the heat.
How about on the transport front? Because it did occur to me, I saw some people make reference to having to essentially track horses off the racetrack to training facilities or to layups. What obligations are there for you for transport?
I was told that they're going to scan them as they leave, and then scan them when they come in and tell them where they're going to go. But it's like, I think 80% of these rules, they talk about it, but you know, they can't enforce them because they don't have the people to do it. So, you know, it's just bureaucratic stuff that's getting weighed down and nothing's really getting done. I mean, I haven't noticed a huge difference since it started, other than you got to register your horses on your phone and stuff like that. But I don't know. I just don't think they have the manpower to enforce it yet, all the crazy rules that they came up with. So
I'll do the same thing we did earlier. We'll kind of table that because there's nothing we're going to change about it today. Talk about your meet.
Slow so far.
Yeah?
Very slow. But hopefully we kick in. I got a lot of babies, and I haven't run a lot of them yet. I got one in today that's just okay. If you're betting today, I heard Cal Lynch's horse is very good.
Cal Lynch's horse? You said you had a two-year-old that oh, hit up, up.
Well, yesterday I gave yes. You know, here's what happened yesterday. I was looking at the program, and Al Goldberg had a horse in, right? So I called Al. We were sitting in the kitchen together. I called Al. I go, Al, what about this horse? You know, there's a pick five carryover. We want to know. Oh, yeah, this horse is good. He's got a little problem, but he can run. But he's got a lot of speed. Okay. So I told JJ, and he picked him on top. The horse ran last. Sometimes you get the bear, and sometimes the bear gets you, right? But so that the pick five yesterday was impossible anyway with that $50 horse. So, well, it paid like what, $10,000 or something. Yeah, so it was crazy yesterday. But we were all chasing the carryover, which didn't come out too well.
Well, and you're running horses everywhere. You're at Monmouth. You're at Parks. Penn National.
Yeah, we're all over the place. Well, I got to go where they fit, you know. Got to keep these things going. The bills are coming in, and you got to pick your spots. I mean, that's one good thing about the Mid-Atlantic. You can move around a little bit, you know.
Well, it's the one good thing about owning a transport company. You don't get those pesky calls from the, you know, the transport company saying, hey, we're putting you on restriction until you pay this down.
Yeah. Well, now I'm so short of help that I got my drivers running the horses, too, so they're double duty.
That's funny.
Yeah, they'll get there, they'll put the horse away, bring the horse to the paddock, because I don't have people to travel all over. But, that's this place is centrally located, so they get a lot of people shipping in, and then on the other side you get people shipping out.
This season, we had John Mooney on. We kind of talked about Delaware. Chris just was very nice to have had Chris Sobosinski sit in, and he obviously has a huge passion for this place. What's your thoughts about where things stand? I mean, obviously, if you're shipping around like this, you're going to where the money is and where your horses fit, but. This is also home, right?
Right. I'd much, much rather run here if I could. But some horses, like the one I got in at Monmouth, they put a race up, a starter race, which they don't have here. So I went up there, you know. Believe me, it's so much easier. You know, involved with the shipping is, you know, you got to get there on time. You can't hit traffic. You got to make sure you got, you know, your pony girls there. It's just everything's so much harder. But when you run out of your own stall, you just, you know, you can't forget anything. Everything's in the barn. It's just, it's like,
that's a good point.
When I run here, it's like a vacation, you know. When you go on the road, it's a pain in the neck. But you got to do what you got to do, especially this time of year when, you know, you're trying to make the money, because in the wintertime, you're limited. So, but I think the meat here is doing good. The handle's doing well. Handle's been good. You know, I see on a Saturday, they used to get, you know, 500,000 handle. Now it's like 1.5, 1.7, you know, and the thing is they only run 8 races, so the handle's, you know, you got to look at it that too. But the handle's been, I thought, been really, really good.
Well, and the racing's been interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny. There's some venues that I think some people, when it comes to the summer season, they get, you know, easily focused, and we're as guilty as anybody on Saratoga and Del Mar. But, you know, Ellis, Delaware, for those that haven't been paying attention, Finger Lakes is the Finger Lakes racing has been excellent.
Right.
And they've had some carry. They just had a carryover yesterday. And there's been some interesting developments on that front that you have to shop around. You have to look. I mean, right. People say, "Oh, the field sizes are just I can't find." There's places to bet if you look, and you know, Indiana, Canterbury, we feature too, and Indiana's taking an 8-day break to sort of give everybody, you know, kind of a refresh, and their you know, their cards are going to be very attractive getting going for the second half of the season. It's really weird with all of the challenges that the industry faces as a whole. The racing has been very good, and
right.
At the upper level, we keep talking each weekend about all of the quality, you know, top level stars.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, we've had the four horse fields here, and then we're going to have a five horse Jim Dandy, but it's five stars. We've had that regularly. I mean, that part of it is coming together, and I guess that means we just look forward to, you know, things like Breeders' Cup, you know, when they all will come together again. But if people aren't paying attention, the race, it's been a good racing season.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'd venture to guess, just by me looking at the, you know, the totals every night after, this place is probably up 30% to handle. I mean, that's a big number, you know. I mean, they're really, you know, they're doing well. So there's a lot of interest out there, despite, like you said, all the problems and all the press and all this and all that. I mean, people still want to bet on horses, so that's a good thing.
What did you? I don't know if I've ever asked you this. Are you from the area or from Philly?
No, I'm from North Jersey.
Okay.
I started at Monmouth Park. That's where you know, I started working when I was a kid, and I lived about an hour from Monmouth, but I'm originally from New Jersey. And then I moved down here in the late 80s when this was open year-round for stabling. I came down here with a couple trucks, and I ended up getting married, having a family, and just staying down here. So I live right over the Pennsylvania line, right by New Bolton Center.
Okay.
I got a little farm over there. But, you know, it's been good to me. Like I said, I've been down here about 30 years. And, you know, I put all my kids through school over here in PA, and, you know, they're all on to college and married and all that. So it's been a good deal. You know, as far as racetrackers, when you were, it was year-round stabling and Fairhill and all, you didn't have to move around a lot. So that's a big plus, you know, because these guys have got to go to Florida and here and there. I mean, it's nice, but it's a pain in the neck if you got family.
We, it's funny, last week I kind of wandered, I think it was, in fact, if it was last Thursday, wandered into a conversation with another Jersey staple. You mentioned Alan Goldberg, but had a... fun segment with Frank Miramonte, and Chuck Spina walked in.
Yeah, he's been around. He had a van company.
Did he really?
Yeah, he owned 12-gate vans back in the day. I mean, Tony might remember him. 12-gate vans, do you remember that van company? Big van company
back in the day. With Chuck Spina. The Jersey side of things.
Yeah.
And Goldberg, we heard, who was it, sent me a text that says, I'm with Alan Goldberg. He says, make sure... mention on the air, he's still alive and still out there, you know, he's
out at the farm every morning,
yeah,
working, you know, he's still doing it, still loves it like everybody else, you know, he's not letting go.
Well, how do you let go, right? I mean,
unless, you know, God forbid something happens. Other than that, you're here right to the end.
How did you get involved with the trucking, with the vans?
Believe it or not, I was up at the Meadowlands, and I hung a sign on the door there. Anybody, my brother had a truck. It was an international pickup. That's how far back that was, and a two-horse trailer, and I hung a little thing on the door at the racing office. Whoever needs a van over to do any kind of racing returns, I'm available, and I left my number. And that's how, and I was working with my brother.
Unbelievable.
I was galloping horse, working with my brother, and Bob Tiller, I don't know if you remember, he's still...
Yeah, sure.
He came over one day, and he goes, you want to take me to New York tomorrow? I got a horse in. I said, yeah. So I ended up hooking up the truck and trailer. I took him to New York. One thing led to another, and the next thing you know, I bought a three-horse van, then a six-horse, then a couple tractor trailers, and that's how it started.
Unbelievable.
But I, you know, I'd known a lot of people around Jersey. Jimmy Ryerson and a lot of guys gave me a shot when I first started out, so that was nice.
That Bob Tiller.
I still see him once in a while.
Well, he's...
He's in Canada.
Canada.
But he would come to Meadowlands in the winter, and that's when Garden State was burnt down, but they stabled there. So he'd go to Meadowlands and Garden State, and then he'd go back to Canada. So I did a lot of shipping. That's how I was one of the first guys I shipped for.
I don't remember him being U.S.
This was early 80s.
Wow.
You know, I was a kid.
Wow.
It was a long time ago.
Wow, and I was just starting to get interested in the game by the early, mid-80s. We, of course, had him on with this Pink Lloyd that he went on this run with Pink Lloyd. It was, just a terror.
Yeah.
And he loved every minute.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Real good guy.
That is funny. That is funny.
He always looks like he's like off in deep thought all the time, you know.
just like everybody in the racing business.
Yeah. It was funny because about 5 years ago we went to the July sale, and we were leaving and we were at the airport, and I happened to be sitting next to him, and I go, "Bob, did you sell that horse?" He goes, "No." He goes, I didn't get it sold. I wanted 200. He goes, "A guy offered me 175. He said, I don't know. What are you?" I told him no. I said, "Bob, what are you, nuts? 175? I said, that's real money." He looks at me. He goes, "You think so?" I said, "Yeah." He called the guy right on the phone. He goes, "All right, I'll take it."
Well, JJ can attest to this because we had the mare that the first horse that we got involved in, and somebody she ran twice and ran really well. We had bought her in the February sale, and paid $23,000. Chuck Simon and I with the DT team, and somebody called and they offered I think $105,000. And I said, "Well, you know, it's this group. They'll have their heart torn out. We would like to get a win with her." And then, you know, she ran a couple more times, three, four more times, and never won. And then had a thing with a hoof issue that ended up causing ultimately her retirement. And I learned from that first experience, the answer is always yes.
You're not kidding.
When they call and say, you know, what do you want for your horse? You can find the number that you're comfortable with and say yes.
Yeah.
If you don't, that horse will go bad on you, right? That's unbelievable.
Quick story. I ran a horse here for Maiden 40. This is back when Tony was riding here. Mike McCarthy, Trevor's dad, rode the horse. I'm real friendly with Mike to this day. The horse won by 5 for Maiden 40. Won a pretty good time. Bought the horse a yearling for $4,000. I'm walking down to the winner's circle. This is before phones. It was beepers. My beeper's going off. There's three guys beeping me. I get back to the phone, but I call. "You want to sell that horse? You want to sell it?" So I said to myself, "I'm going to make a crazy price that nobody will pay. And this way, when they say no, I'll say, well, I tried to sell it." So I asked Mike. I go, "Mike," he comes back. I go, "All these guys are calling me." He goes, "Sell that damn. What are you, nuts?" I go, "But Mike, you're going to ride the horse back." I go, "I don't care. Get rid of it." So I said $150,000. So you know, a guy came by and he says, "I'll give you $150,000. So now I couldn't say no because I'd already, and I, at the $150,000, I was still like, "I'm going to the Derby. I don't want to sell it." I was like 30 years old. So now the guy comes, he x-rays the horse. He goes, "He's got a little flake in his hock." He goes, "We'll give you $140,000. I said, "Oh, here's my way to get out." I said, "Absolutely not." Mattress Mac bought the horse. Then he calls back. He goes, "All right, he's going to give you the $150,000. I was all sad. Three races later, the horse is running for $30,000. You know, it's just crazy. But I really didn't want to do it. I mean, when I said the craziest price, and the guy said yes.
Right? You can't. No, that's what they say. The answer is always yes.
Right.
Well, that's the best story is the one with Joe Torre and Louis Lazzanero and Bobby Frankel.
Yeah, what was that horse?
Was it Vineyard Haven?
Right, yeah.
With Vineyard Haven. And they really didn't want to sell, and Bobby was hemming and hawing, and Sheikh Mo was calling, we'll give you 500, 750. Bobby's like, nah, I don't think so. And they kept going and going, and finally Louis Lazzanero tells the story. Bobby called. He says, they gave us $4.5 million.
Yeah, four
I have
and
to
half
say
million.
Yes.
Yeah.
So and Torre and Louis were thrilled, but basically he was hemming and hawing, and he wasn't trying a delay tactic. He was just he couldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what gets in your head, like when you think of that. Well, here's this one for 40. This guy wants to give me 150, and I'm thinking the guy's trying to rip me off. You know, it's nuts. It's insane.
Oh my God, too funny. Andy Simoff with us, and we had Chris Sobosinski, John Curran stop by. It's been Delaware Fest, which was the whole idea.
Yeah, and I brought you Capriati hoagie.
Now tell me, I don't know Capriati.
Capriati's. Delaware's not known for its culinary, you know, expertise.
It's not big enough. It's not big enough to have a specialty.
Well, there's.
Yeah,
that's good.
Thank you.
I cut it in 4 pieces. You guys,
okay? We can whack it up.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean,
if you come to Delaware, you got to eat Capriati's.
All right, there's the push from certainly somebody that is absolutely in the know. And even though you're not a big Twitterer, you're on Twitter.
Yeah.
Under just Andy Simoff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
As I recall, right?
Yeah.
Does the business have a Twitter?
Just me.
Well, you should do a Simoff Transport one.
Right, you're right, I should.
Simoff Trans.
Right.
All right?
All right.
All right, get on that.
You're in for 5% or whatever I make.
It's the greatest. He's the greatest. We met a million years ago at Gulfstream. Sat me down, barely knew him. He sat me down for lunch.
Really?
That's what he said before.
Those are the guys that hate me. I don't know.
That's what I said.
Everybody
loves Andy Simoff. They're jealous. There you go. There you go. That's the green monster. That's my philosophy.
All right. I'll take it. Not going to disagree with him.
We've got one more. We've actually got a Pennsylvania thing I've got to do because Brian Sanfratello is going to join us and Tony and certainly Jay knows, and you have to go. You got here. Let's give Jay the headset again.
A quick shout out to EPO Joe and Chubbs up in Sarasota.
Chubbs, they're up
Chubbs
there.
Chubbs called me on the way over. You're going to be on the show. I said, how'd you know? He goes, I was listening. So Chubbs and EPO are up there raising
unbelievable.
Hell.
Joe Valenti, of course. So I'll see Joe when I get up there. Andy, thanks
right,
so much.
Thanks for having me.
Sandwich.
You're welcome. Enjoy.
I'd love it. And we'll get, because Jay's got to get ready for, he's got to get ready for, thank you. Thanks so much. Andy Simoff, everybody. And
I got his DNA on my head now. Am I going to turn into a Simoff? Simoff Gracie Van Service.
I was going to say there's another requirement you might not want to be involved in.
It could be worse than becoming Jewish.
Well, he's got everything but the payas over here.
Take care, Andy.
Listen, before I leave,
yes,
second race today.
Second race today.
Okay, the four horse.
The four horse, right?
Andy, come back for a photograph. Who is it? Tell us, who is this, the four horse?
It's Penny Polka.
Penny Polka.
Cal Lynch, okay?
All right.
Cal Lynch ran a horse yesterday, a maiden, first-time starter, that can't warm this one up. Yeah. Can't warm.
I like anything that's not for love, man.
Yeah. Sure. That's it.
So, Tony, you're on it, too? You're on this horse, too?
Yeah, that's who I like, the four horse.
Unbelievable.
Well, let me give you the story, Steve.
Go ahead. All right, a story goes with it. All right, here's
a VA bred, too.
Perfect. We're going to have Brian on.
Here's the deal. All right, this horse here, he ran a horse yesterday, a first-time starter, and run out the TV camera. All right? This one here is 10 times better than her.
How about that?
Okay? So if this one gets away from running, and it's treated with Lasix the first time, he does all his babies that way, I would have to think that this one is well meant. Now, probably as soon as that odds board opened up and it's 1-5, he's going to come over and crush my head. But, you know, Cal doesn't really bet on him, so he doesn't really care.
All right. Well, Andy Simoff has got one in here.
He told me that I'm just, you know, there's no way. This horse is really, really, really good.
Because nice.
I usually have breakfast with Andy in the morning sometimes here. And, you know, we commiserate over things. And I said to him, Cal Lynch is on fire here with the babies. And he said he's run ones tomorrow that, you know, that the other horse that won. Well, definitely is 10 times better than that one. So, Tony, you know a 2-year-old that's free running, and they leave there. That's over.
That's gate's over. You leave the big thing with two-year-olds is you got to leave the gate clean. Be in a position where you're not getting dirt in your face if you aren't on the lead.
Yeah.
And be on the outside because they're inexperienced.
And yeah, and so they don't get intimidated and get you know, turn their head and the whole bit.
Them.
Sure.
And this
horse, sure.
This horse is out of the Mountain of Love Mare. Most of those horses are show speed leaders.
I like it. All right.
To do is break there.
So Tony's giving you the
right,
angle.
Listen, I'm going. I need to step aside.
You got to get ready.
I got to.
You
go.
Got broadcast responsibility.
I got to go on TV. I appreciate you inviting me here. I'm glad I could help you guys out today.
A delight. I mean, this was.
And anytime you need me, you know how to get a hold of me.
JJ Gracie, everybody, Joe Gracie, who made this show. For those of you, there's people listening, Jay, that have listened. They listened from July of. They probably listened to you before July of 05. When you were on in South Florida, and best to Sam.
Sure.
Is Sam in town or is she at home?
She's at Penn National with her horses.
Oh, she's been working with, okay.
She's
with
training
Kim.
A couple with Kim.
How, that's great.
Kim has 35 in training.
Unbelievable. Kim Gracie, of course, everybody who you've seen win for years.
I remember the first horse she ran there, John Bogart, the track announcer there, said she's by a trainer, out of a trainer. And there's no reason why she's not a trainer. And this horse is well meant, and she won. And on that note, I'm going to give my headset to Tony.
Perfect.
And you guys have a safe trip, okay?
Joe, thanks so much. JJ Gracie, everybody, who has been passing on knowledge and doing it with fun and with style for 40 years almost, give or take, right? 35, 38 years. There you go. and not done yet. Too much fun. And Tony, we're going to get Brian on here in a minute, who you know as well. Brian Sanfratello, pull that mic up a little higher. There you go.
Yeah, Brian's been around Pennsylvania racing and been involved with the horsemen for many, many years. You couldn't have a better guest on to speak about racing and been involved with racing in different areas of the country, you know. And here we are at the beautiful Delaware Park, and just had JJ. I forgot to tell him before he left, you got to find one more winner for me, JJ.
There's people lining up for that last winner that'll come at Parks. And of course, you know, earlier this week, the two stakes, the Princess of Sylmar and the Hardspun at Presque Isle, and the Pennsylvania Day at the Races coming up, the two-year-old stakes. Brian Sanfratello joins us. Brian, good morning.
How you doing, Steve? Good to be on.
Well, it's been kind of, we've been very Delaware. We've been kind of celebrating Delaware, but plenty of Pennsylvania breds come over here and do quite well. And, of course, there's plenty of Delaware-certified Pennsylvania breds that take advantage of that program. But the summer in full flight here, and between Presque and Parks, a lot going on, and looking forward to basically the second half of this summer and a couple of big days.
Yep. We are. Can you hear me? Nope, he cut me off. Hello?
Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life. Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, Racetrack Industry Program to put you in the winner's circle. Visit ua-rtip.org today.
We're back. Sorry about that, Brian. And I hope Brian's still there. At first, I thought maybe it was Brian that we lost, but it was Tony and I that got disconnected. And Brian Sanfratello with us from Pennsylvania, and looking ahead to the summer. And Brian, sorry, we got disconnected on you.
Nope, no problem. Yep, we have a big day coming up on August 22nd at Park PA Day at the races. We have 7 stakes races that day, over $1 million in purses, and we are looking at kicking off our 2-year-old PA Sire PA Bred Stallion Series. One race for 2-year-olds and one race for 2-year-old fillies. Again, both PA Sire and PA Bred. So it should be a fantastic day. We have a trainer bonus also in that series of $50,000 to be split between the top 3 trainers with the horses with the most points. Again, we have some great prizes that day, probably about 12 or 13 races going to be run, and it'll be a fantastic day. I think you lost me again.
Each with a $200,000 purse, the PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Now, there's the PABred.com kind of summarizing a lot of what Brian's talking about. Brian, do we know at this point... do we know at this point the mayor's bred numbers, the foals reported for Pennsylvania? How did the breeding season go? No? Case, did we...
I thought I heard the busy signal.
Okay. All right. Well, Case, yeah, well, that yeah, Case is gonna get him back. The new equipment is fabulous, except when you're relying on the Wi-Fi, we're still you know, feeling out the Wi-Fi portion of the equipment. Brian's back with us, and Brian, I'm not sure if you heard, you know, we ran the Pennsylvania Bred commercial, and I came back with a question. The foals reported for 2022. What kind of a season does it look like you had for Pennsylvania this year?
As far as mares bred this year, well, we're definitely going to be down this year as far as mares are bred. And again, the reason for that is we had one of our Stallion stations retire, Glenn Brock and Diamond B. So we lost those horses. But we feel that a lot of horses that were bred to Opportunity and Uncle Reno are going to register in Pennsylvania. So even though the mare's bred count is down, we think that the registered foals are going to be right in there.
Very nice. Well, and of course, not every Pennsylvania breeder that hears that or owner with a Pennsylvania bred, sometimes the pool being a little limited. We talked, in fact, about Jersey breds last week with Chuck Spina. He says, you know, for him, that program in Jersey is keeping him alive. It's a lifeline for a lot of small to medium sized breeders, and the bonus money, you know, whether you breed to race or breed to sell, breeder awards, the bonuses, then what you're doing, adding these stakes and these kinds of opportunities, it's a way to
you know, to meet at the make ends meet, essentially.
Yeah, and you know, we're addressing the problem. We're working on a new science station, state-of-the-art science station in Pennsylvania. We're working on bringing a couple new stallions in to the state. We're working on bringing in some new mares into Pennsylvania. So we have a lot of things going right now. So, you know, if we... we continue to do what we're doing. I think we're going to see enough to stick in the mare's bread.
Well, PABred.com and the opportunity coming up at Parks in August, Pennsylvania Day at the races, the juvenile stakes added, then the big, you know, the biggest, one of the biggest, obviously, days of the fall anywhere, too, Pennsylvania Derby, Cotillion Day, the two grade ones, and we'll see Tony Black there, certainly, and we'll see you, Brian Sanfratello, and the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders. Brian, thanks so much.
All right, thank you, Steve.
Brian Sanfratello, we got about a minute. Tony?
One thing about PA Breds, they're a worthy breed. Why would you want to leave Pennsylvania? But when you do leave Pennsylvania with one, you are always competitive whatever track you go to. PA Breds, gotta love them. And love the bonus of PA Breds when they're running in open races. As a jock, you always love that 40%.
A little boost, right? A little extra, little something-something in that envelope?
I always say, I'm from Jersey, but I love them PA breads.
Tony, I'm so glad that JJ had to head back and to get ready for the broadcast day, but I'm so glad you came down. I saw the chance to put the two of you together.
Yeah, it brings back a lot of memories, JJ and me. We won a lot of races together and probably got a world of stories to tell, and we don't have to even make up any of them.
Well, that's whenever Blue comes on, somebody always says, usually Dave Grenig, he says, you know, Blue's stories are great, and at least half of them are true.
And I'll tell you one thing else about Blue. His crab cakes are great.
Absolutely. We had Tina and I in Ocean City. I got to give them, I'm glad you said that. We stopped in Ocean City working our way up from Chincoteague. We stayed in Rehoboth last night. We found a place, OCM Crabs, right on Ocean Drive in Ocean City. Tina had never cracked crab and picked crab. And I had not actually, since old O'Brickies on Pratt Street, the original, the real O'Brickies, I hadn't done it in ages either. And we had a dozen 6-inch crabs and out of this world. Hush puppies. I had a cup of soup. She ordered onion rings, which was a. But Kara and her daughter, and I guess the whole family works there. OCM Crafts.
Well, one day
Ocean City.
Hardtack and Jimbo Bracali and I went to O'Brecky's. Hardtack stuck me with the bill.
So that's your memory of O'Brickies.
Yeah, and of Hardtack.
Unbelievable.
Great
that
guy. No,
funny.
Great guy. But Jimbo Bracali, Vince Bracali, Hardtack and me, we went there. We ate crabs. And,
that's
of course,
great.
I was the guy who picked up the check.
Too funny. I want to thank everybody that came in. Andy Simoff, John Curran, Chris Sobinski, John Mooney, leaving Delaware after decades on Saturday, and Tony Black, J.J. Gracie as well, and Brian Sanfratello, Pennsylvania Bred, PABred.com. Back at Saratoga tonight, and it's also Duke Matisse's birthday. Happy 50th to the Dukester. There's a big party tonight, and at the racetrack tomorrow for weekend preview at the races live from the Spa. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning. Good luck today.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing?
Naira Betts. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Betts. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA...